Was it something we said?
Are you talking to me?
Do you have a comment to make?
Are you talking to me?
Or a bone to pick with us? Why not send us an email to feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com or join our forum at forum.midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can just leave us a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace, or follow us on Twitter @midwestpeace. So that's how to contact us. Now let's give you something to contact us about. This week, we invent an airplane with windows that roll down. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 44. Now. Today is September 27th, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
So.
Good intro.
We need to change that.
I just read that today. I just heard about that comment today.
That was good.
We need some like submarines with screen doors on them.
That's right. And it's funny, right? Because we predicted this in the last episode. We said we were going to talk about Mitt Romney and any other gaffes he had made between then and now. And he obliged us once again. Now, I mean, does anybody really believe that he doesn't understand why they don't make planes with windows that roll down?
No, I think it's there's an incident. I have to make a comment about it. And I need to say something to address the emergency whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible that he was so upset about, you know, what could have been a very bad experience for his wife, who was on the plane. You know, he was so upset about that he wasn't thinking straight. I guess that's possible, but I think it's more likely that he was trying to be funny, and it just wasn't funny at all.
Right. That's my guess. Is I think he's trying to be folksy.
Yeah,
you know, kind of like what's the deal with these windows? Yeah. You know, kind of a thing.
Right. What's the deal with airplane windows?
But it comes off that he doesn't understand how airplanes work.
Right.
Yeah, it's like that Seinfeld joke. It's like. Like, so did this offend you as a voter? No, it offends me as an engineer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's trying to be, I guess the theme of my claims this episode, is he's trying to be authentic. And I think he's incredibly inauthentic. And I think this is what comes out. This is a byproduct of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me I'm right. I love that.
I think Bill Clinton was about the only candidate and president I've ever seen who could be authentic or could convince you that he was authentic.
You don't think Bush was authentic?
No.
The second one?
No. No.
Oh, that's interesting because I thought he was.
I think Reagan was authentic. Despite the fact that he was an actor.
I was pretty young back then, but I don't know.
Yeah, I can't speak to it. You know, young pup like me.
I'm telling you for the last time. Was he the one who said that? No, that was Clinton.
I guess Reagan gets credit for I guess he believed what he said, you know? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't just spouting words to please a demographic, I don't think. I get that sense about him. I give him that authenticity. And I think W was authentic. I don't think there were layers of W.
Yeah, it's hard to say with him. I mean, he had really good handlers. And so it's always hard to tell whether he's, you know, being authentic, being himself when he says things, or whether he is, you know, saying what his handlers have told him to say.
Right, right.
I think he was authentic when he couldn't remember the fool me once thing. I mean, that's authenticity.
That's right.
And I, when he was at a baseball game throwing out the first pitch, I think that was authentic. Because, I mean, the guy seemed to genuinely love baseball. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Where when I see Obama out there doing that, I don't think he played catch more than five times in his life.
Right, right. But what if there was an opening day three-pointer?
Well, then he's money.
Money from the outside.
Yeah. He drive. Okay, drive the lane. Then I'll give you're authentic as hell.
Yeah, what if there, yeah, opening day layup would be.
Sure. But that's, you know, stick to what you know.
Right. Yeah. Every time
I try to be everything to everyone.
Did he even throw out a pitch this year? I don't know if he has since the first one.
Ever since they made fun of his mom jeans, I don't think he's warmed up to throwing out the first pitch.
Did you give him any credit for showing up in the White Sox jacket?
No.
Oh.
Why would I?
Because it's as we say, authentic.
No, it's not.
It was in St. Louis, wasn't it? The pitch was in St. Louis, and he shows up in Busch Stadium with his White Sox jacket on because that's his team. What did Hillary say when she had to figure out if she was a Yankees or a Mets fan? I like them both. Mm.
Yeah.
The guy showed up repping his White Sox and talks about his Bears all the time. That's, come on, you got to give him some credit. That's authentic.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like it is. I think it's, I'm from Chicago, so therefore I like this team.
It would be good if he practiced his first pitch. Hey, speaking of, do you guys ever see that West Wing where Bartlett's practicing the first pitch in the hallway? You ever see that one?
Yeah.
No, I didn't watch that show.
Yeah, that was a good one. It was classic Sorkin-type writing. You know, they're having some political debate and having some kind of crucial decision on what they're going to do with nukes in Cuba or something. And the whole time he's throwing fastballs down the hallway to his aides.
Yeah. That's one thing Sorkin does well is dialogue.
Yeah.
He's a master at that. He's got a new show on HBO now. The Newsroom.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I heard about it.
I haven't seen it either. We don't have HBO, but okay. So
back to the podcast.
Yeah, we are way off in the weeds, aren't we?
The podcast is the weeds.
It is this week. So the 47% comment that everybody's talking about, I wanted to explore this a little bit and see what you guys thought about it.
Oh, I have some thoughts.
Go for it.
Go for it. You go first, Jeremy. I'm writing them all down. I'm getting carpal tunnel over here.
Yeah, because I'll probably not be very long, and then we'll delve into why this is Armageddon for Rob. But I finally watched the video, because I had been hearing all this talk, and I heard people saying he's trashing the military, he's trashing this, he's trashing that. And I watched the video, and I kept waiting for that to happen, and it never seemed to happen. To me, it was he was talking essentially political strategy, saying, I'm not going to be able to convince these 47% of the population. And so I need to focus here. This is where I have a chance. And to say they're dependent on the government, well, okay, maybe you're trashing them a little bit there. And to make it sound like he's saying, I don't care about these people, or I discount them as being people, I don't see that either. I think it's political talk, like,
right. He discounted them as ever being able to vote for him.
Right. So to me it was somebody looking for a story.
Ooh.
And sure he, you know, if this was being broadcast to the whole nation, he probably would have chosen different words. So poor choice of words. And but I don't think it means he doesn't care about 47% of America and wants to shovel them off the coast.
No, that's not what he's saying. He was saying that these 47% of the people, he'll never be able to get their vote because their main motivation is to take handouts from the government.
Right.
And then, well, let's look a little deeper. I mean, this guy's a smart businessman. He understands his percents, and he's trying to claim he understands the country. Let's go see who these 47% of the people are. Oh, they're either students or they're the elderly, which he totally needs to win as a voting bloc. It's military on combat pay. It's all sorts of groups that we have very good reasons for them not paying federal income tax. But what he was trying to claim them to be was the classic Republican welfare queen idea, that there are people sitting around waiting for their government handouts. He doesn't even know who he's talking about.
Yeah, he conflated a lot of different statistics, kind of rolled them all together into this shorthand that already existed, right? Because, I mean, we talked about this on the show before, the whole Occupy Wall Street and the 99%, you know, there was that story back then about the 53%, which was, you know, based on this statistic that 47% of Americans don't pay taxes.
Right, right.
But
don't pay federal income tax.
Right, don't pay income tax, right. So, the important thing there is that 47% is by no means homogeneous. Right.
Right.
It's made up of 10% of the ultra rich who, you know, managed to escape income tax through various loopholes. And it's made up of, you know, the ultra poor who don't make enough to qualify for any sort of income tax. So I think he was in his element. He was among like-minded individuals. Obviously, he was preaching to the choir, so he's going to throw some stats out there that are going to, you know, get them all riled up, and, you know, right. it's stuff that they're just going to nod and they're going to agree with, and nobody's going to think too critically about.
Right. Now, to me, it goes. This is why I think the airplane windows comment like plays right into this is because I think it's just. He's trying to do something that he's not meant to do. He's trying to, in this case, he's trying to beat the kind of far right talking points to a far right group about all these sort of government people wanting their government handouts and they're dependent on the government. He's trying to play that, but he screwed it up because he doesn't. It's not natural for him to speak in these terms. So what he did is he screwed up the idea of playing on the welfare queens, and he conflated it together with the 47% who don't pay federal income taxes. So he essentially, you know, why it became a firestorm is because he did two things. He grouped this 47% of the people who he totally needs their votes for, which are rich people, old people, you know, people in the military, and he both equates them with welfare queens, and he says that he has no chance of getting their vote anyway.
Right.
And yeah. So how can it be so bad, right? It goes right back to the airplane windows. Like, how can it be so bad? Does the adult Mitt Romney really not understand how airplanes work? No. And he also completely understands how the 47% work. But he's trying to do something. He's trying to portray himself in a way that's not himself.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you get these weird, like, crazy dissonant statements that come out that don't make any sense.
Right. It's kind of like when Obama tries to talk black.
Right.
Right? Because that's not him. But he's you know, playing a role to try to appeal to, you know, some demographic.
Right. Well, we could talk about that, too. I find that an interesting topic anyway, but...
Well,
on the steak side, slide me the porter. On the drink side, slide me the Java.
Oh, that one's going on the blooper reel.
Straight out of Airplane. Come on.
Airplane's a theme me. Tonight.
Excuse me, do you speak Jive?
So... Here's my take on this. I don't think this story would have blown up the way it did if it hadn't been, you know, like sort of grainy cell phone video that was captured against, you know, like nobody knew it was being recorded. And, you know, because everywhere I heard this story reported, that was kind of the lead, you know, like. This video was captured unbeknownst to, you know, Mitt Romney's or anybody else in the room. And so it sets you up, you know, because you think you're about to hear something that's just, you know, really juicy, right?
Right.
Because, you know, it's like
a meeting of the skulls and we got a camera in there.
Yeah, it's your typical open mic, you know, nobody knows it's on. So, but I'm just going to be completely candid. I mean, that's what you're expecting. And then when he says this, you're like, okay, well, I think I've heard him say that before in other stump speeches. So, you know, why is this so scandalous?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, so clumsy.
It was. But
and I was watching watching Fox News Sunday and with all my favorite conservatives, including Bill Kristol. And so Bill Kristol was kind of made news for jumping all over Romney for the 47%.
Right.
And what he said on the show was that it made him so mad as a conservative thinker for so long, trying to push the idea that the Republican policies are the right policies to help everybody, no matter if you're military, elderly, you know, rich, poor, whatever you are, that these policies are the right ones for everybody, and that's why he believes in them. Well, good for him. That's an authentic statement. So now you have the Republican nominee up there basically saying that 47% is just out of your hands, you know, that your policies will never work for them, so you can't even expect them to get their vote. It's like it's a total dagger, or a tiny dagger.
See, I'm not sure, maybe this is splitting hairs, but I'm not sure he's saying my policies won't work for them. I think he's saying they're not going to listen to me.
Isn't that what his whole job is as a candidate? To explain to them why his policies are going to be better for them?
Sort of. His job as a candidate is to explain his policies to people who are going to listen.
Yeah, it seems a little sad. Like in an ideal world, what I wish they would have caught him on video saying was, you know, I got to get out there and explain why what I'm going to do is going to be the best for everybody. That would be a scandal, but it wouldn't be a scandal. That would be heartwarming.
Right.
That would be a good thing. But that's not what he said. Like what if he did the Bill Kristol and said, I want to go out there to every state and I want to talk to teachers and old people and young people and poor people and rich people, and I want to convince them that my policies in the Republican way are far better than this Obama stuff.
He does say that. He talks about, which is the same thing every politician says, this is why I want to do this, and this is good for America. And this is good for the people.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, it's not like he gathers, okay, I'm going to have a rally today, and it's only people who paid no income tax. I'm going to target them to educate them on why my views are great for everybody, and I'm going to change their mind. That would be a waste of resources and a waste of time in a very tight election.
It would be ironic, because to get in, you'd have to show your tax returns.
Oh, I guess Harry Reid couldn't show up. Yeah, where is old Harry now that Romney showed his tax return?
That's the thing. It doesn't count because nobody cares about Harry.
But what?
That is I true. Care.
The only nobody cares about Harry Reid.
They cared when he was telling Romney to show his income tax return.
Oh, he was stupid. I didn't care about him then either.
Oh,
that's actually I always pat my Democratic friends on the back for their messaging when we have Obama as the standard bearer. But what a facepalm fest the Pelosi Reid situation is.
So do something about it.
That's a parliament system. I can't do anything about it.
See,
parliament.
It is.
Put your wig on and do something then.
Put your wig
on. Your powdered wig.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant Parliament Funkadelic.
Oh. Roots Pounds. Yes.
All right. Well, so I'm just glad we have Mitt, you know, providing us with material to talk about every week.
Yeah, it is, and it's very much, it's like, yeah, every week it does seem like the Obama campaign strategy is just to do nothing and wait for the next screw up, you know?
Right.
oh, there goes another week off the news cycle. Sweet, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the debates coming up, they'll be epic.
Really?
I don't know. I'm looking forward to them. You're not looking forward to them?
Well, I probably won't watch them, but the I don't know. If past debates are any indication of what they're going to be like, I don't think I'm going to miss anything.
Oh,
simple. Yeah, but do you watch Saturday Night Live? Yeah. If you want to understand that, you need to watch the debates.
No, I actually stopped watching SNL a few seasons ago.
Yeah, I don't know if it's any better, but
no, they're just not consistent enough.
Like, it's another thing. The internet.
I got to watch an entire season to see, you know, two good episodes.
Right. Yeah, if that. Yeah, and the internet's killed it too. I mean, you can go out there and find funny videos made people in their basement.
Yeah. True. All right. So I had a couple of other links that I had put in the reading room last episode, but we didn't get around to talking to them, so I wanted to bring those up. The first one, just real quick, was an NPR story on morality, or rather moral judgment, and the title of the story is Why Pictures Can Sway Your Moral Judgment. And I just thought it was interesting because they actually used my thought experiment from way back in episode one when I was talking about the trolley, you know?
Yeah.
And they use that as an example of a moral judgment.
I'm sorry, Jerry. What? Sound like Al Gore over there. You invented this thought experiment?
I did not invent it. I brought it up.
Ah, okay.
In episode one, I used it to illustrate a point.
Yes, okay.
but it's a fairly obscure thing, and, I don't hear it referenced very often anywhere. So I just thought it was interesting that they made a reference to it.
Yeah.
So what was the, I didn't read this yet.
Okay. In a nutshell, what they're saying is that your moral judgments on any given topic, like if you're presented with some sort of moral dilemma, your decision comes down to a duel in your brain between the logical side and the emotional side, and the side that wins can be influenced by pictures. If you're either looking at photographs or some sort of emotional scene is described to you,
yeah,
as you're trying to come to some sort of decision, it can sway your moral judgment. You'll have to, maybe I'll include the story at the end of the show, so our listeners can hear it.
And to loop it back in with the other discussion and to represent a liberal mindset, is I think when we're thinking of problems in the country, I think we're like, if someone has empathy about someone who has schizophrenia or someone who isn't paying their income taxes, it'd be interesting to get a picture of what various people are picturing when they hear such things, you know?
Right.
When you picture somebody not paying federal income taxes, are you picturing the guy in the foxhole in Afghanistan? They don't have foxholes, but I'm sure they have something military-like. You know, are you picturing that guy, or are you picturing urban welfare queen?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, everybody...
Well, I know. I still paid taxes when I was a student, so I don't...
Yeah, I think I did,
I must have been messing up my income tax and not weaseling out of it.
Yeah, I think I paid some income tax. I don't know. I had my mommy do my taxes back then. I did. It was too hard.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I agree with that.
The form is even named the EZ.
I thought it was the EZ.
So the other link that I had in the reading room is this interview that John Cusack, the actor, conducted And he's basically taking President Obama to task for some of the what he perceives, I guess, as the most egregious violations of the Constitution that have happened so far on Obama's watch.
Finally.
So, I mean, that portion of it is interesting. But the thing that I really wanted to talk about is, you know, I'm a fan of John Cusack, but I'm not sure that he's cut out to be a journalist. And so I was just wondering what you guys think when a celebrity or an entertainer attempts to, you know, jump to another profession like that.
Isn't that what Huffington Post is all about? Why do I got to hear what Alec Baldwin thinks? Just tell me funny jokes, dude.
You have some, I think there are different tiers of this. And you have guys like Reagan and Schwarzenegger who actually made it into politics. And then you have a lower tier like John Cusack who's trying to make some meaningful move. And then you have Madonna whipping various body parts out on stage and using that as her soapbox.
Yeah.
That obviously is the lowest tier. But I get a little irritated when celebrities use their position to try to promote an agenda.
Yeah, it's very difficult to do that without coming across as preachy.
Yes, but I do give a little bit more respect when they try to research the issues and know what they're talking about, unlike, say, the Dixie Chicks who just make an offhanded comment like, George Bush is an idiot or whatever they said.
You don't have to research that.
You don't need to research that, but, you know, if you...
They were just expressing an opinion. I mean, they didn't write a dissertation on George Bush.
Well,
John Cusack is or was an Obama supporter
last
election. And this is what I'm talking about, and this is what I'm asking of Rob, is to call him out and say, hey, I voted for you, and I've supported you because you said these five things. And I can prove right here, Rob won't see the evidence, but I can prove right here that you have skirted these and not done this and not done that. I want somebody to take him to task and admit that he's not everything he claimed he was going to be and promised to be, and to say that, well, I haven't broken any promises or this was harder than I thought is a bunch of malarkey. I want somebody to take him to task because then I will take them seriously. If they say I support Obama because of this, and they show that they looked into it, they figured some things out, and they're willing to admit that he's screwed up, then okay, now I can appreciate you as an Obama supporter. You've done some research, and you still like him better than Romney. Fine,
right.
I can live with that.
Right.
Rob, I can't live with you.
Jeremy's breaking up with you, Rob. And it's
not me, it's you.
Oh, I'm heartbroken.
I totally agree with you, Jeremy. I mean, I think, you know, the people that support a candidate but are honest enough to say, hey, you know, this guy's got flaws. I see it, but I still think that, you know, he's going to do some of the things we want him to do, and therefore he's better than the other guy. You know, that's at least honest.
Yes.
It's not, you know, it's not the fanatical, well, you know, we have to support this guy or else.
Right.
Yeah, and even worse than kind of the fanatical thing is I've seen it work where it's almost like in reverse that no matter what the deity does, then that's what you support.
Yeah.
You know, so
right.
So, you know, if it's, you know, let's say somebody is such a Obama supporter that, you know, that like like they supported him when he said he wanted to close Gitmo, you know. So then he doesn't close Gitmo, and you're like, yeah, we shouldn't have closed Gitmo, you know, like basically go on and buying all of the story that comes right out of the deity,
right?
You know, it's in reverse, you know, yeah.
So tell me how you're not doing that, Rob.
I knew that was coming.
For me, I think, like, so how do I square it all? I think for me, I have very low expectations, I guess.
That is a cop-out.
That isn't.
That is.
Well,
it's over between me and you.
Does it come down to, I mean, do you feel like if you agree with the criticisms of your guy, then you are forced to recognize that the other guy is okay? I mean, is that the logic that?
Well, I think the other guy.
Yeah, okay. Dude, really?
Because I mean, for me personally, on my own journey through political awareness, you know, it was my third eye was opened. And, you know, when I realized that it's not a binary system, that just because my guy has flaws doesn't make him inferior to the other guy, it means that all of them are flawed. And, you know, I'm able to step back and say, okay, it's not an either or choice. So I can be critical of, you know, this guy without being a supporter of the other guy.
Yes.
It's not all or nothing.
Right, sure. And that's how I am. I'm not like that.
No.
Well,
at least it doesn't come out to me that way. Maybe that's because of my own biases, but I don't see that.
I see that whenever we're talking about anything other than Obama.
Yes. There you go.
But that seems to be, you know, I don't know, Rob. You have a soft spot for the president, and
I do.
I just seem more willing to defend him than maybe you should in some circumstances.
I think I defend him against, like I say, I defend him against what most of the charges are against him.
Try again.
Why? I think. As an Obama man, it's so easy to just take the machete to all the silly stuff. You know, I don't even have to defend the stuff that is hard to defend because I'm too busy worrying about whether he's a secret Muslim.
Yeah,
you know, or whether he, you know, yeah, it's that's why maybe I'm looking forward to the debates. I want to see someone. I wish it was Paul Ryan, but I want to see somebody. I personally think Obama's a smart individual. I think he understands what's going on. I want to see somebody that matches his intellect go toe to toe with the dude and see how it shakes out.
Yeah.
And I don't think the media does it because they're more stupid than they are liberal. And I think the right is just mad. They're more mad. There's a lot more anger than there is explaining why a tax cut is going to be better than whatever he's doing. There's not it's not a battle of ideas between Republicans and Obama. It's a battle against Obama himself as a dude.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can.
And that's very easy to fend off and to get behind him and support for that thing. And that's 95% of the discussion. We, you know, if we ever got to the 5% where we could actually talk about, you know, the actual effectiveness of the policies or his, you know, his kind of his poor performance and in passing what he needs to pass, well, you got some points there.
Or to say that I think the Obama administration plays on that silliness card.
Oh,
they when
oh.
When listen,
Rob, listen.
You're talking about you don't even get a chance to defend the real stuff because you're too busy taking the machete to the silliness. Well, when somebody presents a good argument, like, hey, anytime you raise the capital gains tax, revenues actually decrease, and when you lower it, revenues increase. and this is why we can't afford this. And hey, have you looked at this about healthcare or Medicare or Obamacare? And it challenges what he is presenting. You get, I don't have time to address these warrantless attacks.
Really? Yeah. I don't see it like that.
All right, well, I'm going to compile some video then and send it to you.
Okay, that'll be good. Make sure you give us links to put in the show notes.
Well, it is interesting enough, though. I mean, that's what... Yeah, I really don't see it like that, but I could see if you did see it like that, how frustrating that would be.
It's very frustrating.
See, I feel your pain. Are we back together?
No. Once I'm finished, once you're out, you're out.
Oh, it's so cold out here.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will cover some listener feedback and maybe one or two more stories we got here in the reading room. So stay with us. Feedback this week from a listener in Afghanistan, believe it or not. His name is Jordan. Jordan says, hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that I just got done listening to episode 40 and 41 while sitting in my guard tower overwatching detainees in Parwan. Yes, the place where we were, quote, insensitive and, quote, accidentally destroyed a few Qurans. Nice. He says, I enjoyed them both. Just now getting to download 42 and 43. Keep up the awesome dialogue.
Hey, all right.
All right. Well, thank you, Jordan.
It's inspiring.
Yeah.
And now start paying income tax.
That's right.
Freeloader.
Oh, really, that's pretty awesome to get feedback from.
Yeah, from our troops.
Afghanistan, our troops in Afghanistan. I mean, when first I thought you, when you said we got feedback from Afghanistan, I thought, oh crap, the Afghanis are targeting us now.
Taliban!
Hello, Mr. Tailband. Did you know that aluminum siding can raise the property value of your right. house?
We and that's the last episode. Thank you.
Are you interested?
As we go underground now Taliban, to avoid the Taliban.
You qualify for the platinum card!
A Taliban!
Right. Well, that, you know, that feedback brings up something interesting, or I think is interesting. The Quran burnings and the death threats over Muhammad cartoons and the film now and all the stuff that has exploded because of that.
Right.
I understand excusing that, saying, well, you know, it is desecrating their profit here. And, when this artist got an award for his Piss Christ sculpture.
Right. Why wasn't the Catholic Church like burning his house down and
Yeah. Make him sit through 12 masses in a row or something, you know what?
Right.
I'm just saying that I don't think anybody's excusing it, are they? I don't think anybody's excusing it.
Well, they aren't saying, "Hey, knock it off. You're being ridiculous." This was just a cartoon, or this was just a stupid movie.
Well,
I think the rest of the world's saying that.
Yeah, and I mean the question that is being begged here is why is Islam special, right? Why is Muhammad on this list of things you can't depict and nothing else?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, worldwide. That seems to be the only thing on that list, and I don't know, I'm puzzled by that.
Yeah. I also think it's kind of, it's a tough line to walk for, like, when the president talks about it, if, you know, you got to stick up for the free speech, but it's kind of like, come on, dudes, just, you know, there's a difference between promoting free speech and just being a punk, you know?
Right. It always reminds me, when they start talking about, you know, images of Muhammad, I always think of Stephen Wright and a joke he did years ago about how he has a rare photograph collection, and one of them is a photograph of Harry Houdini locking his keys in his car. I don't know why, that just always comes to mind when they're talking about images of the prophet.
Oh, secret photograph.
Yeah, it's the rare photograph of Muhammad.
Yeah, and there was...
Here's a photograph of Norman Rockwell beating up a child.
Right. Yeah, there was a great moment in the Stephen Colbert, who's a very ardent Catholic in real life and on the show as well. But he was mentioning the some Gnostic gospel or some text they found that intimated that Jesus had a wife.
Oh, yeah.
And he did this whole bit, and you could tell that it was like funny in his persona, but also kind of funny just the way the church operates, and like it was just a very professional classic kind of satire of the moment. You know, he's like now we got to think of, you know, Jesus and his wife Mary, Jesus and Mary Christ, the Christs. And how he's going to have to have the second coming. He'll have to come in a minivan and a polo shirt. Won't be able to hang out with his buddies anymore, you know. And like it was just kind of nice and fun and kind of respectful, and it's like,
yeah. And there's nobody, you know, calling for his death. There's no,
right.
You know, there's no archbishop in New York issuing a fatwa against Stephen Colbert.
Right. Right.
So where is the difference? Because all I hear is that Islam is a religion of peace.
Yeah, right.
So where does that come from? I don't understand. And I will admit, I haven't read the Quran. I haven't studied it at all.
You got to start in the back and read to the front.
That's the secret, huh?
That is the secret.
You got to read it backwards.
That's right. So don't start on page one. Well, it is page one, but it's not the page one you think.
Okay, a couple more stories here. We have links in the reading room to, the one I found just completely horrifying. Houston police fatally shoot threatening wheelchair-bound amputee in the head. I'm like, really? This sounds like it should be on The Onion. Yeah. But it's not.
I saw that he was waving a threatening piece of metal.
It was
the size of a pen.
It was a ballpoint pen. Yeah.
I don't know how do they get to shooting him.
Yeah, I don't know.
Understand that
the officer, not the officer who shot him, but his partner who was there, said he was in fear of the safety of his partner and the safety of himself.
Well, is that the only reason for a shooting?
Yeah. I mean, how do you fear a schizophrenic, wheelchair-bound? I mean, first of all, he's a double amputee. He's missing an arm and a leg, okay?
Something must have cost a lot.
Yeah.
Wow, Rob. Good one. That is out of the park, man.
Yeah. Nice. It says the suspect trapped one officer with his wheelchair in the corner of a room, quote, where he couldn't get out. None of this story makes sense to me.
Right.
I really don't understand how any of this could have gone down the way it did.
Yeah, I can see how you could have a dicey situation. You could even have a violent situation. You could even have a possibly dangerous situation. That all makes sense to me. But how do you go, look, I'm just going to have to shoot this dude.
Right. I mean, it's like the one we did in the last episode about, you know, the guy they just shot on the side of the road. He's standing out there with a knife, which, you know, in a certain situation, that is certainly a deadly weapon. But right. if he's 20 feet away from you and there's eight of you and you're all armed, I don't know. I just wanting to bring these stories to the attention of our listeners, and maybe they will start to notice a pattern like I have and start to, you know, draw some conclusions about where we're headed as a society or as a police state, which is what we seem to have turned into.
Agreed.
Okay, so what do you got, Jeremy? Any links in there you want to talk about?
Well, I think you knew more about that link than I did, the paradise in Honduras, where it's going to be no income tax, limited property tax. If Honduras can do this,
yeah,
maybe we should take a look at it again.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Whether they pull it off or not is still in question, but if they do, it will definitely be an interesting experiment to watch, because...
I think it's interesting that you pointed out that anybody who wants to live in this, what are they calling it, a city or an area or however they refer to it, they have to bring something to it. They have to bring capital or a skill.
Right.
There's a novel idea. Hey, you need to have a skill in life.
Right.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, what, Rob?
What does that mean, Rob? Why? Well,
how hard is it to make a successful community of successful people?
Well,
I could pull that off. Well, let me see if I could create.
I don't think you could.
The point is, you can't have a successful society full of non-successful people.
That's true.
Okay,
I'll agree with that. We have a lot of non-successful people in our society.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
Under your plan, we're going to give them half of our money. That's what we're going to do.
I'm down with that.
Under my opponent's plan, her house would be burned to the ground.
How can you scoff at that, Rob?
Golly. This is a good segue into the next episode.
Where Rob invents the perpetual motion machine.
It's like you guys are like, it's not hard to, the problem is how, what do we do with all the non-productive people? How do we get people that are not productive to be more productive? What are you going to do with people? Well, the question is, what do we do? That's the question of the Midwest peace process. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like if I just take all the Ivy League kids, boy, you know, I'm going to have a pretty smart group. And I'll pat myself on the back for creating a smart city. Well, I took all the smart kids.
Okay.
It's like going to the MIT Tech Club and getting all the MIT nerds and creating a little town and going, boy, why is your city not as techy as mine?
Now, strictly speaking, this experiment is not just about gathering a bunch of smart people in one place and seeing what they can do. It's about creating an environment that's very conducive to business.
The idea of the city.
Yeah, that, I mean, you're virtually eliminating all of the government burden on entrepreneurship.
I thought the point of the city was to just get away from all the other people we don't like.
No.
No, it's to get away from government.
That we don't like.
According to this story.
Yeah.
It says, Honduran leaders hope that the city will lead to an economic boom for the poverty-stricken country south of Mexico. The average income in Honduras is $4,000 a year. So, you know, they're hoping that this turns into another Singapore or Hong Kong, I think, is what they... Yeah, Hong Kong is what they make the comparison to.
I like it. Fire it up.
Well, yeah, it'll just be... It'd be good to watch that if it happens and see how successful it is. All right. Some other links in the reading room. I encourage our listeners to check them out. These are always articles or videos that we've come across or that listeners have provided us. One listener did provide a link this past week to a story about the melting Arctic sea ice, because we touched on that briefly, I think, in a previous episode. A couple other good ones in there. There's an Al Franken video. If anybody's an Al Franken fan, you probably enjoy that one. But I think that's all we got.
All right.
All right. Well, thank our listeners, and we will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
If you watch this show on a regular basis, you know I have a close personal relationship with Jesus. We are super tight. In fact, I took that picture on my iPhone. That's why I was so shocked to hear this news.
New evidence from an ancient text that suggests Jesus may have been married.
On this scrap of papyrus are the explosive words.
Jesus said to them, my wife.
Married! Oh, crap. What is the rule on wedding gifts? You have 2,000 years, right? But anyway, first off, JC, I am so happy for you. Mazel, baby. And I've got to say, it comes as a bit of a relief. I mean, you're a fit dude. You wear sandals. Spent all your time hanging around with 12 other guys. People were starting to talk. And hey, what a catch, right, ladies? It is so hard to find a nice Jewish boy, let alone the nicest Jewish boy. And his dad, super well connected. He knows everybody. But as happy as I am for my brosia, this news has got me a little bummed out. I mean, Jesus was one of my last single friends. He wasn't just my co-pilot, he was my wingman. I mean, I settled down, but he was still a party animal, always turning water into wine, hanging out with prostitutes. But now he has a wife, you know. Mr. and Mrs. Jesus and Helen Christ. The Christs. You know things are going to change when I go to confess my sins. You know he's going to tell her. You can't have secrets in a marriage. And she'll probably throw in her 2 cents, you know. You're really going to forgive him for that? Normal people don't do that with a Glade plug-in. And folks, oh, listen up. He can forget that beard and the robe. From now on, it is clean-shaven and a polo shirt. And when he comes again in glory, it's going to be in a minivan. We used to have so much fun. I mean, we'd be on the beach. I'd be having trouble in my life, and he'd carry me across the sand. Well, forget that, because now he'll be loaded up with beach chairs and a cooler. And what am I going to do on Sundays? We used to watch the game together. Well, I guess I'll have to go to church.